This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho.
We are off in a post bye week edition of the Naked Bootleg podcast, presented as always by the Boston Herald. Evan Lazar here with Adam Kirchin, as always. And Adam, I know you were dealing with some things, but we just talked about it, that we enjoyed this week off, a little bit of a break for us Pats writers, which was nice.
Yeah, it was good, but recharge and ready to get back at it.
Yeah, back at it. Yep, and you know, it's getting cold now in New York City. I'm not used to this cold stuff, but it's winter is upon us, which means that, you know, it's a good thing for football. You know, usually this time of year we start to see the Patriots take round into form a little bit more and get some good football. So hopefully that's what we get going forward. But before we break down the Broncos Mile High this weekend against the Patriots, first, we wanted to look at this second half of the season from a macro level a little bit, and just kind of give a few guys that need to have a big second half of this year, not only for the Patriots to continue winning, but also for themselves personally in some cases. Adam, who do you got?
One guy is Kyle Van Noy. I think, you know, when, you know, I think we've gone over this a little bit before, but especially now that Hightower is now officially out, you know, you need a guy who's, you know, as versatile as Van Noy can be with playing in the middle or on the edge, and especially being on the edge now. I mean, when you got guys like Roberts and Harris who are pretty much inside guys only, you're going to need his versatility. He'll have to play as much as he's played as in the before, and he's going to have to play well. So he's the first guy that's just – came to mind for me.
Yeah, I think that he's a guy that in the last, as the defense has kind of turned around in the last four games, you can look at Van Noy's, you know, production as one of the biggest reasons why that defense has kind of found its identity a little bit over the last month or so. You move him all around the defense, clearly knows the defense pretty well, knows the play calls and all that stuff pretty well, seems pretty comfortable these days, especially moving forward and, you know, playing out on the edge, which is something that they're going to need him to do more now. You know, obviously that Hightower is gone, like you mentioned. So yeah, he's a good one. Just looking ahead kind of to next offseason, almost the two guys I wrote down were Malcolm Butler and Nate Solder. Just for them personally, they're going to have to you know, deal with the contract situation in the spring, and they're both in contract years. Butler has been okay, but you know, definitely hasn't been as good as years past, especially last year. And you know, he's looking to break the bank with that big, you know, number one corner contract. And I think these last eight games plus the playoffs are going to be a big barometer test for some other teams on whether he is going to get that type of money, you would think.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And then, you know, to just sort of branch off that, the whole cornerback group, you know.
Yeah, Gilmore is a big one too.
Yeah, you know, and see if Bademosi can keep playing as well he has, and, you know, how much time he gets, you know, sort of that dynamic of, you know, when Gilmore is ready, and it looks like, you know, I mean, it should be this weekend. So, you know, how the Pats play that, how they're able to, you know, juggle all that playing time and find the right mix, you know, I think that's also a pretty, you know, important aspect going forward. And I guess on the offensive side of the ball, you know, I feel like the running backs are sort of rounding into form and the running game is rounding into form. So I'd have to say, you know, somebody like Brandon Cooks, especially given, you know, sort of the tenuous status of Hogan's injuries and all that stuff, you know, that might force Cooks into, you know, more of a diverse role instead of just being a deep threat, even though he has been more than just that, but increasing those other types of looks. If Hogan does miss significant time or any time. And then Gronkowski, you know, I mean, listen, he's, you know what you're going to get from him, but it's been tougher to score in the red zone this season, and he's your red zone ace in the hole. So, you know, he's got to be that going forward. I think those are the two offensive guys that I think of the most.
Yeah, Gronkowski, it's a good point about the red zone. You know, they've done him a little bit of that, isolating him as like a wide receiver basically and throwing him fades or like letting him box guys out, do stuff like that. But it does feel like in the end zone it hasn't been quite as dynamic for him as it has in years past, where he's just drawing 2-3 guys every red zone play and is just, you know, an absolute nightmare to defend. He's been good, obviously, but in that area of the game, you could definitely see it. And with Nate Solder, I mean, you know, this is gut check time for him. I would think, you know, whether he's going to be a Patriot beyond this year, whether this offensive line can really come together. It's kind of like 4/5 of the line towards the end of going into the bye week was playing pretty well, and Solder just continued to be kind of the weak link. So I think that if he has a future in the NFL beyond this year, then he's really going to have to show that in the next 8 games or so, because I think a lot of teams are going to look at it as a 30-year-old tackle with some injury history, with a lot of reps, you know, under his belt, and a guy that isn't really the same in pass protection anymore. So, you know, that's a big thing too. And we keep on, like, it feels like Brandon Cooks could have a bigger impact. I think that everybody feels that way. And then you look at the numbers and he's like 5th in the league in receiving yards or something like that. And it's like, well, how much bigger of an impact, you know? But at the same time, it does definitely feel like, you know, for that big Brandon Cooks 150-200 yard game where he has a big game breaking touchdown. That quite hasn't happened yet. You know, he had the one that was against Houston who had a pretty long touchdown, but not one that has really, you know, changed the complexion of a game, so to speak. So I think that, you know, all those guys are definitely going to have to, you know, continue to perform well for this team with some of the injuries that they have. And when you take a look at the Patriots schedule down the stretch quickly, a lot of division games, obviously, backloaded with those 5 division games. But the next 2 games coming up, and getting into the Broncos here a little bit, the Broncos and the Raiders were games that in, you know, when the schedule came out, it looked like they were going to be tough games, and now maybe they're not going to be as tough as we thought. The Broncos now sitting at 3-5, seemingly playing for their season. And this one, you would think, go 3 games under 500, it's going to be pretty difficult coming off that beatdown from Philadelphia. On top of the fact that, you know, this has been a house of horrors or somewhat for Tom Brady, 3-7 in his career in Mile High, I think it's also kind of a gut check time for Denver, in the sense that they're going to really come out, especially on defense, you would think, playing balls to the wall in this game.
Well, yeah, and just going back to Solder, I just think, you know, we can't sort of overstate enough just how, you know, like with the situation with his son.
Absolutely.
That's so tough, and that, you know, that could be affecting, you know, how his play in some way. I don't want to intimate anything that it, you know, bad like that, but just like, I mean, the stuff going on in his personal life is tragic right now. It's really hard. So, you know, hopefully, you know, everything is going well there and he can, you know, keep recovering. But that's just this is something to keep in mind when looking at Solder's play right now is, you know, when you're talking about the Broncos and the Raiders, okay, if you're, you know, look, this Broncos team is sort of as, you know, beaten down as they've been when a Patriots team has gone in there in a while now. You know, that's, you know, I've said it a couple times this week. It just feels like when you watch that game, you know, watch most of it until they turned away because it was such a blowout. It was, you just got the feeling when you looked at those defensive players, like, what do we have to do? You know, like, I feel like, you know, the defense didn't play well, but I also feel like part of that is they just know that their offense isn't going to help them at all. And that has a very, you know, that has a very it really just makes things hard on a defense to go out there and try to keep performing against a good offense when you know that even say if you put the offense at, you know, at the 30, you know, the other team's 30, they're only going to get a field goal or they're going to miss a field or something, like they're not going to get in the end zone. So that's kind of what I feel like is going on there. I will say though, they just play differently in Denver, like every team, but the home field advantage for Denver is, it's, you know, when I've covered a game in Denver, it was the 2015 AFC Championship. That's a real home field advantage. I mean, it's
one of the few ones that are left, you would say, you know, across the league.
Yeah. I mean, that place shakes when it gets loud. So, I mean,
and yeah, the altitude and yeah.
You know, I just feel like it's almost like watching it being at a college stadium, like one of the cathedral type places. So, you know, I think the Patriots on the one hand are catching the Broncos at the right time, but they're also, their backs are against the wall. The Broncos are, you know, they're still not technically out of it, even though they don't look like a playoff team at all. And they're going to be getting up for, you know, a Patriots team that, you know, is a huge rival and stuff like that. So that element of it, I think, still makes this a dangerous game. But, like, hey, if you look at it from, you know, sort of a more logical standpoint, I mean, the Patriots went there last year and won. And that was in Denver too, you know, so the Patriots are starting to play well. They're gaining confidence in all forms. They're, you know, even when they didn't have Hightower, their defense didn't really dip. It didn't seem like, you know, which is a huge confidence boost. They've lost, you know, Gilmore for a few weeks, and they've had, you know, they had Hightower out, and their defense is still playing well. So I think that in that respect, you know, this is about as good as you can feel for a Patriots team going into Denver.
Yeah, I would agree. And it kind of does feel like the Denver Broncos are starting to slowly give up on the season. I thought the defense played very competitively throughout that entire game for what the score was. You know, it was an absolute blowout from basically the end of the first quarter on. And I thought that they competed and tried their best to slow down Carson Wentz. But that Eagles offense is just hitting on a different level right now, that even the Broncos defense, as good as they are on that side of the ball, couldn't stop them. And it definitely, the offense being as bad as it's been in Denver, which has really happened since they kind of broke out in week two, maybe, you know, reading a little bit too much into the headlines there about Trevor Siemian. The offense since that point has really been a mess. And I think that when you look at the defensive side of the ball, they gave up 51 points because the offense was so stagnant and turnover prone that there was just, the well was breaking, you know, on that side of the ball. I didn't think it was because necessarily that those players quit or weren't playing at a high level. The Eagles really brought it to them. And it's one of those things too, where the Eagles scheme offensively is different from the Patriots specifically, but also different from a lot of teams in the NFL. They run much more of like a Kansas City style offense with a lot of read option and options with the quarterback and using Wentz's athletic ability to make decisions at the line of scrimmage and stuff like that, where it's like putting Von Miller in a read option instead of having him just rush the passer with a traditional pro style. So like, with Brady back there now Denver can go back to its identity on defense, which is Von Miller getting after the passer and those guys covering guys in the back end. Much more traditional look, much more traditional style of game for them. So I think that bodes well for Denver. This Eagles offense is like an enigma right now. You know, as good as Carson Wentz has played, I think that the scheming and Doug Peterson has been even better with his play calling and play designs. So I think that had a lot to do with this. And the Denver Broncos defensive players after the game, a lot of people were like, oh, they're making excuses, calling it a college offense and stuff like that. But basically what they were saying was that like, it is not anything that we play on a week to week basis. There's only a few teams that have the ability even to run that. And it's really Kansas City and Philadelphia right now with a few other of those teams with some mobile quarterbacks thrown in. So that equation that you saw Philadelphia use to beat this Broncos defense and put up 51 points can't happen with the Patriots just not going, not the same type of players, you know, available to them. So I think in that respect, this game is going to be pretty low scoring because of that. But on the other side of the ball, you know, Brock Osweiler is the starting quarterback and he's not any better than he was last year for Houston. So I think that the real, you know, key to this game is something that Philadelphia just did unbelievably well, and that was controlling the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. The Eagles really got after Wentz, got after Osweiler, pressuring him 56% of the time, which is one of the highest numbers I've seen all season for a quarterback. When you pressure, when Brock Osweiler is not under pressure, he's not good. When you pressure him, he's even worse. So, yeah, you know, that's kind of what happened in that game. The Patriots don't necessarily have that same style pass rush, and as bad as Brock has been, he's still an NFL quarterback. They still have Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders on the outside. So if there is no pressure, you know, any quarterback in a clean pocket is going to be able to make some throws. So that would be my biggest worry, would be, can they get any pressure on Brock Osweiler? Can they stop the run against the Broncos, who have been able to run the ball a little bit in some of these games that they've played in? And on the other side, can they block? Can they pass protect for Brady? So, you know, the Eagles were able to absolutely dominate this game on the line of scrimmage last week, and that's why they won by 30 points.
Yeah, okay. It's funny too. Like, you know, I when I listened to those comments about college, this is something we were talking about at the beginning of the season. Remember with Watson and other guys coming in, and that whole, oh, that's college. Hey, man, it works. You know, right. Like rust when you get, you know.
Works real well. It's all these college offenses before Watson got hurt, obviously, are the top offenses in the league. You know, yeah. Eagles, Kansas City, Houston, all those offenses are destroying people.
Yeah, exactly. Like when Houston was like, okay, we'll adjust and use what Watson does best. We're going to look at what that offense did, you know, to
right.
All the teams before he got hurt, you know, Kansas City. And then, you know, it's just in general, like at a certain point, you just have to accept certain offenses as offenses, period, and not college, pro style, whatever. Like if it works, it works. It's a system. You
right.
And it's, you know, just because it's more prevalent at a lower level doesn't mean it's not as good.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that what we were saying back then has sort of come to fruition.
Yeah.
Osweiler's, I mean, look, their quarterback situation is not good. I do think, though, like, you know, it's going to be tougher to pressure. I think they can still pressure Osweiler. I just feel like the Eagles' defensive line is so much better than the Patriots one right now in terms of just creating pressure with their front four. Those guys are, you know.
That's the best pass rushing group in the league in right. Philadelphia right now.
I still feel like kind of that Denver's offense, you know, even when they had good quarterbacks, it was more about, you know, running the ball, then building off play action. And, you know, if the Patriots here can stop the run, which I think they will be able to, you know, they'll be in good position to keep this very low scoring, or at least.
Yeah. I definitely kind of see this game following the similar trend to what the last four games for the Patriots have been. You know, the offense, I don't expect them to score a lot of points against this Broncos defense. This is what this Broncos defense is built to stop, is a guy like Tom Brady. They have all the corners, they have the pass rushers. So I would expect this game to be, you know, in that Chargers type ilk where the Patriots kind of have control of the game the whole time, but it's not really showing up on the scoreboard as much as it is just a feel thing. And I think that there's one clear advantage and another one that I think is interesting that the Patriots have. But first, like on a sideline, this is a clear mismatch with Belichick and Vance Joseph here. This isn't John Fox or Gary Kubiak anymore, you know, in Denver. And Vance Joseph got completely outcoached by Doug Peterson in this last game. I can't imagine that he's going to have much better luck against Belichick. And I think that there's a little bit of distrust right now in terms of the players and the coaching staff and the general manager in Denver too, because they cut TJ Ward in the offseason, and 8-9 weeks later, Chris Harris is talking about it in a press conference today about how they all missed TJ Ward, not only on the field, but just him in the locker room also. So, you know, that was an interesting decision at the time. Now it sounds like, you know, they're one of their best players on the entire team is saying that we missed this guy. You know, we missed TJ Ward. So that was an interesting decision. Obviously, they had to change the guard at coach. They didn't really have a choice. But Vance Joseph has been okay, but has certainly not been as good as the last two guys that they had in there.
Yeah, I mean, Vance Joseph at the beginning of the year when the Broncos were playing well, I mean, just based on that, I was thinking, I was thinking it's fine. But, you know, but before he was hired, it just seemed curious to me. He was a defensive coordinator with the Dolphins on a defense that was not good.
Right.
You know, and I was just thinking, well, maybe he's, you know, just a very good interview or something, or, you know, he's better than what the results showed. But it really does think, but I think it's larger than just the coaching. Like you said, the whole structure sort of coming apart. And a lot of it does go back to the quarterback situation. I mean, they drafted Paxton Lynch in the first round, and he's injured still, right? I mean, it's. Yeah,
I don't know if he's injured or if they just don't want to play him. But if he can't beat out Simeon and Osweiler, then they're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I don't think their offensive line I think their offensive line took a step back last year. I like Garrett Bowles, who they picked up in the draft this year, but they still have problems. Like, it's just nothing that they can really rely on. They really relied on when they were – you know, going to Super Bowls and being really competitive is there right now, except, you know, certain parts of the defense. So,
right.
So I feel like they've lost a bit of their identity. It's sort of a transitional phase for them. I'm not sure exactly what to, you look for silver linings for every team, and it's hard to find one right now for the Broncos. They just seem to be trending downward.
Right. Like, the silver lining is what you just mentioned, is that they still have some of the players that won the Super Bowl on this team.
Right.
Like, they still have Von Miller. They still have Chris Harris, Aqib Talib. They still have these guys. But the problem is that, you know, those guys are really few and far between at this point in terms of guys that are still on the team that won that Super Bowl in 2015, which I get, you know, there's roster turnover. The Patriots have that, plenty of examples of, you know, that you go back to the 2014 team, for example. It's like a whole nother team at this point. But at the same time, you know, they have no stability at quarterback. They have no stability at head coach. And they're cutting guys that are, you know, not only favorites in the locker room, but that was like, you know, similar to like Seattle, where it's like the Legion of Boom. You know, those guys like are brothers, you know, they stick together, you know, whether good or bad. If TJ Ward was in this game against the Eagles, I don't know if he makes a difference in terms of on the field, but at least they would still be that coherent group. Now they have a bunch of new guys in the secondary also.
Yeah.
So I think it's an interesting point that this kind of this whole structure that was up so made so strong by John Elway's return to the executive office is now all of a sudden looking like it's falling apart here a little.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned Seattle too, because isn't it funny how every year, I mean, I know Seattle lost this weekend, but, you know, there's so much chaos at the beginning of every year for Seattle where you feel like it's the personalities are going out of control and they're fighting and losing and this strife, and then, you know, like towards the middle they start figuring it out, and I feel like they're as good as anybody in the NFC right now, whereas at the beginning of the year I thought, all right, well, this is sort of where they, you know, yeah,
their little run comes.
I know they lost this weekend, but I still have every confidence in them either making it to the Super Bowl or the NFC championship or whatever.
Seattle is like, you know, what they say about your parents. Like, when they stop fighting, that means bad things, right? Like the fact that this group, like, fights a lot is, like, their identity. Like, that's, like, what they're about. Like, they're going to get in each other's faces, and then they're going to come out the other side, and they're going to win the game. Like, yeah, that's been Seattle forever now, and as long as – I mean, Russell Wilson is also damn good. Like, that guy doesn't deserve – you know, he deserves all the credit that he gets. He probably deserves more credit than he gets for how good that he is as a player. So that helps a lot too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I guess going back to Oakland, if we're looking at this two-game stretch, like you said, I feel like Oakland's kind of the opposite of Denver in terms of the direction they're going. Perfect game the other night. But I feel like, you know, all the pieces in place, right, and just has to have to start playing better. And if they keep, you know, if they keep playing better, I mean, they had sort of a weird start, the expectations yet, but still, like, it's like Khalil Mack is still in the backfield, right, every time you drop back. Lynch had a good game this weekend. You know, Carr is still good. You know, they got those receivers. Their offensive line's big and physical. I mean, so I think, you know, that's going to be a real test. I mean, especially it's in Mexico, you know, like this is like, there's so much. I feel like in a lot of ways, a lot of big games on the schedule this year, but this is so interesting to me, this Raiders game, because it like a neutral site game in Mexico at that stadium with all the, you know, with everything you hear about the U.S. national team going there in soccer, it just has this aura about it. And like, there is a legit amount of interest in American football in that country. And I think there's a ton of Raiders fans in Mexico. So it might be like a road game for them, but who knows? There's just so much unknown there. Oakland is still so talented. I think they'll find themselves picture in the second half. And so that game, especially coming off road trip where to Denver, where you're not coming back here, you know, it's hard not to look forward to that one, you know, and just to see what that would be like, because I feel like Oakland, if Carr's healthy, I'm not counting them out as being one of those teams. I feel like, you know, even though the Bills beat them and the Bills, you know, right now would be in the playoffs, right? Like, you know, I have more confidence down the road of Oakland, you know, being a dangerous playoff team than the Bills.
Yeah, I think Oakland, you know, in terms of Denver versus Oakland, I think we expected Oakland to have a better year than Denver this year anyways. And if they didn't, it would be far more disappointing than it is if Denver doesn't have a good year. You know, if Denver goes 6-10 this year, which it's looking like they are kind of trending in that direction, you know, it would be obviously a disappointing year for that franchise's, you know, high standards. But in terms of what we see on paper, I don't think it would be all that surprising. I mean, he didn't really have a quarterback. The offensive line was kind of a mess. New head coach, rookie head coach, you know, a couple of things changing in the secondary, like we said. But with Oakland, that's the same team that they had last year that everybody was saying would be in the AFC Championship game if Derek Carr doesn't get hurt. So, you know, this is the same team, same quarterback, same coach, same offensive line that has a bunch of blue chippers on there that have been paid a lot of money to block Derek Carr, you know. Some really good players on there, you know, Ozemil and Gabe Jackson, you know, a lot of really good players on that offensive line. I think the Oakland matchup is a really tough matchup, and obviously this little bit of, you know, a vacation, a business trip type thing that they're doing here is part of it too. But in the past, you know, I'm remembering that Green Bay to San Diego trip that they did. They've done a few of these like trips where they stay out west, you know, to continue to practice out west. And sometimes when they come back from it, it was really a nice little team bonding experience where they're together for an entire week in one place, in a hotel or at the practice facility, wherever they're practicing. And they kind of come together a little bit, especially if you get two wins out of this. I think that said, you could see the Patriots really start to roll if they can win both of these games, because then you look down the stretch and it's all AFC East besides Pittsburgh the rest of the way. So, you know, I think that that's a really good opportunity there for the Patriots to kind of get some really big momentum coming out of these two games. Because before the bye, as good as, you know, four-game winning streak looks, and obviously the most important thing is to win, you know, there was still issues on the offensive side of the ball, red zone being number one, that we were talking about here, you know. So I think that if they can get that, all those things together, come together as a team from this, you know, little road trip that they have going on here, then maybe we could be looking at a Patriots team that rattles off like a 12-4, 13-3 season before it's all said and done. And I think that's really the goal here. And, you know, it's funny that you say that about Oakland, because I agree that, that something needs to flip there over this second half of the season. Or I think that Jack Del Rio is kind of on the hot seat if it doesn't. Yeah. Because they are way too talented of a team to not make the playoffs or to go below 500 this season, especially in this NFL with the way that some of these teams have really stunk up the joint. you know, to have a team with that many high-profile players that are not just names but are actually good football players go 7-9 and miss the playoffs.
They're one of the few teams that hasn't had their star starting quarterback knocked out for the season.
Right. Like they have this, they have the quarterback, they have Khalil Mack. They drafted some guys in the secondary to help out OB and Conley, who's like kind of obviously been, you know, dealing with some stuff that has kept him off the field, injuries and also some, you know, suspension type stuff. So that's part of it too. But overall, that team is way too talented for their current record. So maybe, yeah, maybe they do rattle off some wins. Before we move on from this, I wanted to touch on the Von Miller, you know, matchup here, because that's obviously the one that is kind of outside of, you know, the Denver big picture type stuff, Brady and Denver and all that. Von Miller versus Marcus Cannon, which is probably going to be the matchup, because Von, for some reason, I'd love to ask him why, he likes to line up over the right tackle instead of over the left tackle, has his entire career there. So that seems to be the matchup. If I was a Denver coach, I'd probably move him over to the other side a little bit more in this game and have him rush against Nate Solder instead, seeing that Cannon has played a lot better than Solder this year. But last week, Lane Johnson won that matchup at right tackle against Vaughn, and that's kind of what flipped that game.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, it has to be one of those things where Miller is looking forward to, you know, trying to get the better of that matchup this day. I'm sure he remembers, you know, how much he dominated in that game. So that'll be a great one-on-one matchup to watch. You know, and it goes back to the, you know, you've talked a lot too about the screen game of the Patriots not quite being what it's been in the past. And so this is, you know, a chance to, you know, if you know you're going to have, you know, a good Denver pass rush, and, you know, if Miller's getting back there, if you have a few successful screens and can make them sort of, you know, think about it instead of, you know, teeing off, that could be big. Maybe this is the week that that aspect of the offense takes flight.
Yeah, that was basically what Philly did to slow down Von Miller, was they essentially ran a lot of actions physically towards him that weren't just dropping back Wentz and passing. They ran a lot of options. Obviously, the Patriots can't do stuff like that, but they ran a lot of options, a lot of screen passes. They ran that direction. There are a bunch of plays where they scored touchdowns where they just didn't even block him, and they just kind of, you know, let him roam and kind of get lost in space a little bit. That's the type of stuff that they kind of did to combat him and keep him from just pinning his ears back and getting after Wentz. So I am interested to see if there is some of that as well, screen game, some phantom blocks, stuff like that, that kind of just confuse Vaughn a little bit and get him out in space and kind of make him make a decision whether it's to go after Brady or cover a pass or whatever. I think that is, you know, kind of the way that you have to go, is because anytime that you have a player that is as quick around the edge as he is, you know, you got to give him something to think about before he just goes, you know. Otherwise, if he's just going, like in the AFC Championship game a few years ago, and he was just going on every single snap, you know, there's no chance. There's no chance for Brady. So when you got to make them think a little bit, whether they're going to run the ball at him, run the ball away from him, screen pass it, you know, hold him up a little bit, do something that can kind of slow him down. Let's pick the game before we move on to the next topic. I think the Patriots will win this game, but I think it's going to be low scoring. I really do. I would see like a 23-14, 23-13 type win for the Pats.
I agree. I think, you know, I wouldn't rule out either like a 20 to yeah, that seems about right. Last year it was 16-3.
Right. You know, they did the old four corners offense on the Broncos and just like ran the ball half the time and
right. And the Patriots running game is really picking up. I could see that again. I don't think there's, you know, this is like we were talking about Cook. So this isn't the type of like defense where you want to throw a lot of deep balls because that gives a guy like Miller more time to get to Brady. Right. So you got to sort of pick your spots in that. So I think sort of the same game plan is smart. And in terms of when they used Lewis a lot, and you know, I would keep going back to Lewis. I mean, again, like we've been talking all year about him, you know, being the best running back on the team. I think that's still true. I'd see something like that, like a 21-13, you know, 27, something like that.
Yeah, it's crazy still to me that the best runner in between the tackles is Deion Lewis on this team. I would not have guessed that in August. Like, I knew he was the best all-around running back on the team because he could catch the ball, run it, you know, do all that stuff. But the best between the tackles guy, I thought for sure would be Mike Gillisley. And it's pretty shocking that it is Lewis, but that's where we're at. So now we're going to move on to a little quarterback talk. The Patriots obviously made a blockbuster trade about a week ago now. Adam and I haven't spoken since this all went down, but the Patriots traded Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously, to the San Francisco 49ers for a high second-round pick. I like to put that in there. I mentioned that it's going to be at the top of the second round most likely. Yeah. But, Adam, you took a look at some of the quarterbacks in the 2018 draft. That may be the successor to Garoppolo and possibly even to Brady if everything works out for that player. And it seems like a lock now that the Patriots are going to take a quarterback in, you know, late April or whatever it is.
Yeah, they really have to. They really have to either draft one or acquire a younger one somehow. They've got to do that. And so, I guess one of the questions is, do you take it with that pick, or do you feel like you can wait and get somebody a little bit later because the crop seems deeper this year? You know, you can never say with any certainty because it is, you know, projections, but when I wrote that article, I was writing it and I was looking at the guys that I've watched this year and I'm like, I like a lot of these guys, you know, it'd be tough to pass up on, you know, some of these guys, if they're on the board. Like, look, a lot of people acknowledge that, you know, somebody like Lamar Jackson is such an incredible college player, but they sort of doubt his pro potential. And so I've seen him in the top five in some mocks, and I've seen him, you know, I've read certain scouts on certain reports saying, you know, I think he's a second round guy. So say Lamar Jackson slips down to the second round and he's sitting there at that pick, you know, do you pass on somebody like him?
Right. Yeah. You know, I don't know how you can. Yeah. And Lamar Jackson, I've always thought that Lamar Jackson's going to be a top 15 pick. I think he's that talented. And then I also think that, you know, Deshaun Watson's success in the NFL, I think really helps. Same with Dak Prescott. That those two guys coming from the similar style of offense as those spread read option offenses that are, you know, really predicated on their athleticism being a huge factor. coming to the NFL and having those work in Dallas and work in Houston and even work in Philadelphia in some respects, I think is a huge help to Lamar Jackson's draft stock.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, another guy that I really have been on board with the way through, especially this year now that he's at West Virginia, is Will Grier. And I talked about this earlier on Murph's podcast and Murph and Steve's podcast there. But the thing about Grier, look, I mean, when he was at Florida, that when he started at Florida, to really come on. And then he got suspended for the PED thing. He transferred. Florida has never been the same offensively. Like I said, good argument that if Will Grier is still Florida, Jim McElwain is still the coach. You know? Like, and so he's at West Virginia now and he's having a good season again. Like, and it's one of those things where people are going to watch the film and he throws off his back foot some. He doesn't have perfect mechanics, but I mean, I think he leads the nation in touchdown passes. He's got, like, he takes shots downfield and can hit them. He can make a lot of pro throws. And he's a good player. He's been good everywhere he's been. So, there's another guy that I don't necessarily see in every first round mock, but could be there. He could also be very successful in the system, including the Patriots. So, and then there's the Finley guy at NC State who, you know, sort of checks a lot of the boxes you see in a Patriots quarterback in terms of efficient, you know, high completion percentage, you know, good touchdown to interception ratio, a lot of the things that, you know, everybody looks for, but especially, you know, it's a very, that would be a very logical pick, but you know, he's another guy that a lot of people are starting to like now who might not be there, at that point in the draft. So, but who knows, maybe the Patriots are packaging things and moving up like certain teams can do.
Right. You know, the guy and now that he had 600 yards in a game, I don't know if this is likely or not, but the guy that I would put the chips in for would be Baker Mayfield.
Yes.
I just feel like when I watch Baker Mayfield play, it screams Patriots quarterback, very similar guy, to Garoppolo in college, but he plays at Oklahoma instead of at a subdivision school.
Right.
You know, super athletic dude, obviously, but more importantly, he's got that alpha male personality, which I think the Patriots really care about when it comes to the quarterback. Like Brady obviously has that, Brissett, Garoppolo, all those guys have that kind of quarterback shine to them. And I think that matters to the Patriots, even though some people think that it's kind of like draft season hyperbole. I think it really does matter to them that this is a guy that everybody in the huddle, all other 10 guys, can stare at and have the utmost confidence that they're going to succeed in whatever play.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some of the things about Mayfield that I love, the game was going on, like when he took – and planted it in the middle of the Ohio State win, and like kind of thing is hilarious and just sort of awesome. I mean, on the one hand, you know, it's bulletin board fodder if they ever meet again, but you know, it's just one of those things where it's like that kind of leader, and you just know players like playing with him. It's one of the things we were talking about earlier in terms of, you know, you start picking guys apart and you say, all right, well, he's a little small. But, I mean, Jimmy wasn't that big either.
Hey, Drew Brees is, like, barely 6 feet tall. And he's going to the Hall of Fame. So if you have it, you have it. And I think Baker, especially one thing – the two things I think that are most, like, Patriots-esque in terms of quarterback play is obviously that personality like we just talked about, and then accuracy. Like, they need somebody that can come in here and throw the ball down the field accurately and on time to receivers, because that's what the whole offense is built on, is timing. And that's why everybody loved Jimmy Garoppolo so much in New England, was because he had accuracy and timing. He was able to keep the offense in that same general structure as what Tom Brady can do. I think Baker Mayfield has a chance to be that in that same category because his accuracy down the field is as good as it gets in college football right now. Doesn't throw a lot of interceptions, and he throws a lot of really big-time throws on the money deep downfield. He's just a guy that, like, if they're sitting there and they have that Niners pick ends up becoming, I know we're playing hypotheticals, but if that Niners pick ends up becoming the 33rd or 34th overall pick and we're at pick 20-something and Baker Mayfield is still on the board, like maybe they, you know, do a little bit, they trade up a little bit to slide up back into the end of the first round to pick him up. Because I think that he's a guy that as soon as Brady is ready to walk off into the sunset, you know, I think that he's a plug-and-play starter. But at the same time, I think that now that he is kind of showing in his senior year at college that he's probably going to at least be this runner-up to the Heisman, if not the Heisman winner, that maybe he's now in that top 15, top 20 range instead.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing about Mayfield that made me think about in terms of what Patriots are looking for, he's also got that kind of underdog edge to him.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, FCS, you know, Brady was drafted in whatever round, you know, and, you know, Mayfield was a walk-on.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Level he's played at, he's been outstanding. Even when he was in high school, he was a tremendous player, and he wasn't even that highly regarded. And then, you know, I forget where he started out, came to Oklahoma as a walk-on, played incredible. His way on the team. You know, he's got all of those little sort of check boxes. And accuracy, you're right. Like, when I wrote the article, he was over 70%. He was like 72%.
Right. And a lot of people are saying that that's like a college thing and a system thing. And Oklahoma is way better than everybody. It's not. It's when you watch this guy throw, he is throwing darts out there. Darts. Yeah, I love the guy, obviously. But I think that, you know, one thing, and I was glad that you wrote the article, because one thing that when this Garoppolo trade went down, it kind of felt like everybody was talking like Jimmy was the only guy that could play after Tom. Like it was Jimmy or nobody, like Jimmy or bust. And it's like, there's a draft every year. And Tom has, you know, a couple more years left on his contract right now. And it sounds like the Patriots are planning on him playing for another at least 2 to 3 more years. I'm not going to tell him he can't. They're not going to tell him he can't. The stats aren't going to tell him he can't. So he might as well. And then it's like, okay, well, they can draft another guy right in the same spot that they took Jimmy Garoppolo. And then we're right back in the same situation, but he's younger and he's under contract. So it's right. Like, you know, a reset button. They didn't hit an implosion. You know, you have guys like Colin Coward and all these guys going on and say, this is the end of the Patriots dynasty. Belichick is on his way out. He's trading away the backup quarterbacks because he doesn't care about the future anymore. Well, the future is in 2018 draft in April. You know, that's when the future is for Belichick. I just think it was ridiculous that no one was even talking about the fact that they can just literally redo what they did with Garoppolo 4 years ago in this upcoming draft.
Exactly. But they have to get it right.
That's fair. That's fair.
You know, they have to pick the right guy. If they pick a guy that, like, you know, say Mayfield isn't the guy, or say Finley or any one of them, Lamar Jackson, any one of these guys just doesn't work out. Could see a real slip when Brady leaves, but you know I about this quarterback class in the same way that we've been talking about last year's running back class for a while now. So, like, you know, when these guys were freshmen, you know, we were to wow, you know, like,
I mean, Sam Darnold, yeah, Sam Darnold last year and whatever 5 games it was plus the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, even like the Ferguson kid at Memphis, like, he's really good.
Yeah.
Like,
Mason Rudolph is really good. Josh Allen is really, I mean, these are some guys that can really, at least really good in terms of like throwing a football, you know, like they're capable, very capable passers. It's just going to be a matter of finding a guy that has the entire package. And now it sounds like Sam Darnold like might stay at USC, which kind of makes sense. Darnold is one of those guys. Obviously the Patriots aren't going to be in position to draft him, but just quickly, like, he's one of those guys that gets it. Like, he's really smart dude. And what he's saying is he's saying, hey, I hold all the chips. Like, I can go wherever I want. I'm not going to just declare for the draft when the Browns have the first overall pick and I have no idea who's going to be my head coach. I have no idea who I'm going to be throwing to. You know, I'm not going to do that. Darnold sounds like he's going to stay in college, or maybe have more of a chance of staying in college than he did, you know, coming into this year when he was basically the consensus number one overall pick. Now all of a sudden this quarterback class is kind of getting a little bit picked apart and a little bit more spread out, I think. And I think that definitely benefits the Patriots. Like, I don't think that before, you know, they were talking some crazy talk about how many quarterbacks were going to go in the top 10 because he had Darnold and Rosen and Jackson and Josh Allen and all these guys. And now it sounds like there's still going to be like five or six that go in the top, you know, 35 picks or so, but it might be, you know, one guy at 2, one guy at 12, one guy, you know, and so on and so forth. Not so much everybody at the top of the draft like it was sounding like before.
Right. Yeah. It's and also, like, there's more teams have good young quarterbacks right now.
There's a lot of great young quarterbacks. People are like, there's a passing of the guard going on here, obviously, with Brady and Drew Brees and Ben Roethlisberger and that 04 class with Rivers and Eli Manning. You know, those guys are definitely in the twilight years, but I won't rattle all of them off, but there's a lot of really good young quarterbacks right now in both college and the young guys in the pros too.
Right. And I think, again, it goes back to trying to them right. So I guess that comes full circle, but you know, it is one of those things where there's going to be a lot of good cut quarterbacks. It's kind of like a perfect storm for the Patriots. If you think about it, like, there's a lot of good teams. There are a lot of teams that are going to be picking in the first round that aren't going to be needing a quarterback like that.
Yeah.
So certain guys are going to be there. And there certain good guys are going to be there. So yeah, I think, you know, the whole thing, like, listen, like, I understand, why getting rid of Garoppolo, a lot of people don't like it, you know, it's fine, you know, that it could turn out bad, you know, but are in as good of a position as you could have to find that next guy with a higher probability of success. I guess that's the thing. You know, this is like picking last year, you know, this is like, you know, Kareem Hunt fell to what, the fourth round, you know? Yeah. So there are so many good backs. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we've been talking about this draft class since these guys were freshmen and sophomores and whatever. And guys are even emerging late that, you know, like Finley, you know, nobody was really talking about Ryan Finley as a, you know, like a quarterback option in the first round. And now it's picking up steam. So, there will be somebody good there. The Patriots just have to find the right one and pick them.
Yeah, that's the thing. And, you know, I can see it now. If it doesn't fall their way and they somehow don't get a quarterback in this draft, which I can't see happening, but, you know, I mean a quarterback that's like, you know, the next guy, not necessarily a quarterback just to have another arm. You know, it will be interesting to hear, you know, the reactions from that, because this Garoppolo trade was like we just traded Aaron Rodgers to our Brett Favre or something along those lines, which is fair. I mean, I'm not trying to pick on Jimmy or kick him on the way out or anything like that. But at the same time, I mean, we saw 1.5 good games of Garoppolo. I wouldn't say that his preseason was anything special any of the 4 years that he was here. So, right. You know, really, we saw one and a half really good games, and then he got hurt. And, you know, you don't love to blame players for injuries, obviously. But one thing that made Tom Brady Tom Brady is that he doesn't get hurt. You know, right. He's on the field every game, except one season. So, you know, that is a big part of quarterbacks that people kind of underestimate. You know, Sam Bradford would be one of the five best quarterbacks in the league if he could stay healthy. Right. You know, he just can't. So, you know, that's a big part of it. But, yeah, we could go all night talking about this draft stuff. Adam and I are definitely big draft junkies. So, tune in the spring and we'll get some more more draft talk in there. But for now, what do you got coming down the line here?
I think tomorrow, whatever comes out of the locker room and stuff like that, I haven't decided on that yet. But for Sunday, we're planning on something about, you know, just the sort of the overall franchise stability at kicker the Patriots have enjoyed since, you know,
a long time.
Two guys, you know, that, and so I haven't gone through it yet, but we're going to look through Pro Football Reference and see teams have had how many kickers over the years. And it's almost like one of these first world problems that the Patriots fans sort of might take for granted. And so, you know, and it's sort of timely because they're going to Denver where all this hullabaloo about Gostkowski's struggles over the past couple of years are happening. So, that's – I'm working on a kicker story.
Cool. Hey, listen, kickers need love too every once in a while. And just go ask the Seattle Seahawks how they like their place kicker right now after he missed three kicks in one game and cost them the game. You know, we obviously the AFC Championship game a couple years ago, Gostkowski played a huge factor in the Patriots losing that game, missing that extra point. But, you know, this type of stuff happens a lot around the league all the time with kickers just missing not just, you know, big kicks like that one, but just kicks in throughout the entire game. Seattle, you know, that game shouldn't have even come down to that final drive for Kirk Cousins because they left 9 points on the board with three missed kicks. You know, it's a big deal. it's a big deal. And yeah, Patriots fans definitely take it for granted how long the sustained success of that position has been. For me, I have a piece out now on the Patriots after the bye. Have struggled a little bit after the bye. You would think the hoodie with an extra week to prepare would be unbeatable. But recently, they're 3-3 in the last six seasons after starting out 9-1. In the first 10 years of the Brady Belichick era. A lot of that has to do with the opponents, which is what I wrote about, basically a bunch of playoff teams in the last 6 years that they've played coming off that bye week. Big part of why, you know, they have struggled is, you know, playing better teams. So that's part of it. And before we sign off, I do want to thoughts and prayers to Roy Halladay's family, because that was like one of the worst, you know, stories. Obviously in a long list of really bad stories that have been happening in the country recently. But, you know, for a guy that I grew up watching and emulating, a couple of Cy Youngs, a World Series, to lose him to a plane crash is pretty tragic. So thoughts and prayers for that and for all the other things, the Texas church shooting and all that stuff it's starting to add up to like a ridiculous amount at this point. And, you know, I feel like we had to say something about it because it needs to be said. But yeah, that's all we got for this week, but we'll be back next week reviewing this Broncos game, previewing a trip to Mexico for the Patriots and Estadio Azteca. Here we come. Yeah. So that'll be that. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening to the Naked Bootleg Podcast.